Sheila Zielinski Show, the only show to give you the truth behind the headlines, prophecy, and the deeper things of God. Now, here is your host, Sheila Zielinski.
Hello, everyone, and welcome to this Wednesday edition of the Sheila Zielinski Show. I broadcast weekdays at 6 p.m. Eastern Time right here on WINB. And of course, for more ways to listen, go to weekendvigilante.com, go to the listen page, and you can find more ways to listen to the program, including the customized apps. We are really getting a lot of great feedback on those apps. There's one for Android, one for your iPhone. Very easy and convenient way to listen, as well as the podcast for those of you on the go. Download it, and away you go. Hey, for those of you who have got a copy of Power Prayers, I want to hear from you. I want to hear your testimony. What is your favorite prayer? What prayer has made a big difference in your life? I want to hear from you. Go to the contact page at weekendvigilante.com. And if you have a guest idea, please do email me and let me know. If you're hearing somebody out there in YouTube land, or you've come across a particular guest, email me and let me know. Today, of course, our prayers go out for the wildfires in Tennessee. Our prayers are with those folks out there. The Tennessee mayor said today the death toll was 4. This is the third day of these fires and all the homes and businesses in the wake of destruction. It is indeed a hellish scene, that wildfire zone, and that is the largest fire to hit Tennessee in a century. The crews have been battling those fires since late Monday night, so we just lift the state of Tennessee up in our prayers, especially Gatlinburg. Well, I want to jump right into the program today. It is my good friend. I like to have him on as a regular guest. He wrote the foreword to Green Gospel. He was very instrumental in exposing ClimateGate. He is the champion climate denier, let me tell you. World-renowned speaker, author, and my good friend, the highly acclaimed climatologist and very brave man. It is Dr. Tim Ball. Tim, I know you've been traveling around the globe. It is so good to finally have you back on the program.
Well, thank you, Sheila. And I'm just so pleased to be able to be on your program and have that opportunity and try and help people understand what's going on in this crazy world.
Boy, crazy. You know, I said the other day, it's Caligula level insane asylum, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, you know, and you sort of think it can't get any crazier, and the next day it gets crazier.
We have a lot going on right now. And of course, with all this, well, let's start with the United Nations, Morocco. We saw the big climate deal go down there. Were you surprised, of course, that I haven't talked to you in a while? Good old Leonardo DiCaprio, what did he say recently? No one should run for office that is not taking this green agenda serious.
No, I mean, you know, if you look in the dictionary under hypocrisy, there's DiCaprio's picture. I mean, here's a guy with 5 massive mansions flying around in a Learjet and telling us how we should behave and how we should reduce our carbon footprint. I'm tired of these people. And I think the public are tired of them as well. You know, stop preaching to me. Look to your own life and look to your own correcting things. But this is the problem. And of course, you've seen a lot of it during this election with Trump. And it's something that's annoyed me for a long time. People are entitled to their own opinions. That's what democracy and free speech is all about. But if you're given a stage by the public, it's to sing or to act, not to express your political views. If you want to do that in another location, that's fine. And we saw that with the actors at that play Hamilton lecturing to Vice President-elect Pence. It's really completely out of line. But I guess we're in the cult of the personality and we're in the cult of egotism, and it, you know, it's all about me. So this is what we see. By the way, I'm going to grab credit here, Sheila, because I predicted Trump would win all along, even though there were many people saying, no, he's not going to win. Because Trump, I don't think he's fully aware of what's going on in the world, but there's a middle class movement going on. By that, I mean that people are tired of extremism. That's what we're talking about with DiCaprio. As you know, in many of my public talks, I'll start off by saying morning, and then say, notice I didn't say good. Make up your own mind. People are tired of being told what to think. And so what's happening is there's a middle class revolution against the left and the right. Now, we saw it with the Brexit in England, where the elite in London wanted to stay in Europe because they were all making money and not doing any work and telling other people how to behave. But the vote outside of London was to get out and get control of their own lives, of sovereignty and everything else. Well, that's exactly what happened with the Trump election. Trump said, to heck with the people on the left, the elite on the left, and to heck with the elite on the right. It's time to deal with the majority of people who are just trying to live good, honest, hardworking lives. So you're seeing this around the world. I was just in Australia talking for a new political party there called One Nation. And this is really what Trump did. Trump had to run as a Republican because, of course, the party system virtually dictates it. But he really didn't. His slogan, Make America Great Again, meant that he was running for the America Party. And this is what the One Nation Party in Australia has done. They've said, to heck with the socialists and the conservatives and all these traditional political terms. They're not working for us. And of course, as you and I have talked about, Sheila, that majority of people find ourselves conservative on some issues and socialist on other issues. And the polarization of the politics doesn't fit us. And so what people are doing is adopting a regional approach. So Trump is saying, you know, America first, it's the America Party, the One Nation Party in Australia, created by a woman by the name of Pauline Hanson, who I had the pleasure of meeting when I was there, is exactly the same thing. And in Canada here, we saw it a little while ago in Saskatchewan when people got tired of the socialists and the Tories and the conservatives. And so Brad Wall formed the Saskatchewan Party. He's for Saskatchewan. And as you know, and most Americans wouldn't know, but Canadians know, Saskatchewan people were voting conservative at the federal level, but they were voting NDP or socialist at the provincial level. Well, those are two diametrically opposed political philosophies. And so, as I said, what we're seeing is a complete revolution going on, and Trump was part of that. Now, I hope he doesn't dive into the swamp when he's talking to Romney and people like this. For me, that's a sort of abandoning the voters. But if he sticks to his guns and works for the people, it'll be a very good situation.
Well, of course, you know, the world unites behind the green economy. As Trump vows to actually exit from the Paris Climate Agreement, the green economy here, obviously we know the old technocrats at the UN are working feverishly to unite the entire planet on this Paris Agreement. What are your thoughts coming away from that? And then springboard into this climate deal in Morocco last 2 weeks.
Okay. COP21, which is the Conference of the Parties 21, was the follow-on from the Paris Climate Accord. It was in Marrakesh, Morocco, partly because the King of Morocco gave Hillary Clinton $12 million in order to secure it in his country. But it's the beginning of the end. And the reason I tell you that is that about 6 years ago, a fellow in Australia contacted me. His name is Malcolm Roberts. And he'd been a businessman. He's an engineer. So he started looking at the climate issue, and he couldn't believe what he was seeing. What happens is, and you and I have talked about this, when you start saying, well, look, this is what they're doing, this is how they're corrupting the science, people can't believe that this is going on. I mean, the things that Hillary Clinton was doing, it's just almost mind-boggling, the level of corruption and the lack of complete accountability, which is another thing that Trump's got to watch. But anyway, Malcolm helped him set up a group called the Galileo Movement, because what happens is when one person starts to look at the climate science, they can't believe what they're seeing. And they start to say, hey, am I crazy? Is this what I'm really seeing here? And so what we tend to do is to find a group of other people and say, you know, let's talk about this. Or we can't all be crazy. So Malcolm set up a group called the Galileo Movement, and your listeners might want to Google their website in Australia. It's a very, very good website. But then about 3 years ago, he contacted me again. We were talking about different things. And one of the things that we started talking about is empirical evidence. That is, don't tell me what a computer model's telling you. Show me the proof. You know, it's sort of like the Downing-Thomas situation. So, of course, Malcolm said, no, we're going to tackle this empirical evidence thing. He said, but I'm also going to run for political office. And he ran as a senator in Australia for this One Nation Party and was successful. And again, your viewers can watch his maiden speech in the Australian Senate. And what he's talking about there is this issue of empirical evidence. You're telling me that human CO2 is causing global warming, but show me the evidence of that. You haven't produced any evidence. The evidence that they produce, of course, is they've got a computer model and they increase the CO2 in the computer model and the temperature goes up. Well, of course it does, because you programmed the computer model to do that. But then they do a classic circular argument, because they then say, well, in the computer model, when CO2 increased, the temperature went up. Therefore, that's proof that an increase in CO2 from human production is causing the global warming. And it's completely false arguments. And so Malcolm, for the very first time of any politician in the world, challenged the bureaucrats in the Bureau of Meteorology in Australia and said, okay, show me your evidence. And of course, they couldn't do it. They wrote a long report in response, and we just tore it apart. So I flew to Australia and had a press conference, and a fellow by the name of Tony Heller, who shows how they've been altering the temperature record to make it look like there's actual global warming when there isn't. And so he would get up and present this information. Then I would get up and say, well, look, here's what they're doing. This is a one world government, one world agenda, total control of the world. And this is what's going on. Well, one of the things that came out of that meeting, or the what we were doing in Australia, was that about 25, 30 years ago, I had appeared before Congress in the United States on this issue. I'd been invited to give a talk at a place called the Competitive Enterprise Institute. It's a pro-business, pro-development. Some say it's libertarian, but it isn't, because libertarianism is actually anarchy. You do need some minimal levels of government. It's controlling it. That's the issue. But anyway, there was a guy there by the name of Myron Ebell. And I got to know Myron quite well, and in fact, met with him at Heartland Climate Conferences and so on. Well, we got a call from him, and when in Australia, he was appointed by Trump to take apart the Environmental Protection Agency and dismantle the whole United Nations climate program.
Wow.
Withdraw their funding and bring an end to it, because all that's driving it is, of course, two things. One is the federal government putting literally billions of dollars into it. The other is the bureaucrats, of course, keeping it going, because they've told the politicians it's a problem. And then, of course, politicians like Obama using it to control people, but also other politicians using it for carbon tax, a great money grab. And so what's happening is that on the 12th of December, I'm going to be in Washington making presentations in the Senate to Myron Ebell and all the other people they're gathering around, and just saying, look, this is what they've done and here's how they've done it, providing them with the basic information so that when they're challenged on it, they'll have all the answers that they need. And of course, you've been very kind to allow me to provide a lot of those answers and help people understand what a scam that's been going on. But this is a real turning point. I've waited 40 years for this chance.
Wow, Tim, that is very exciting, especially the chance to dismantle the Environmental Protection Agency, possibly the chance to get rid of this devilish Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change for the United Nations. That's been a prayer of mine for years, to scrap that. Well, you know what? We need to shut down the United Nations is what we do need to do. But boy, that's a dream come true to dismantle those nefarious agencies. So that is really good news. And switching gears a little bit, Tim, I want to get into a few of these headlines. So check this out. Bloomberg, this is a very recent article, United Nations to give approval for man to alter climate via geoengineering. Democratic Party platform calls for prosecuting global warming skeptics. That was last week. This is a really good one. Fake news charges new technocrat paradigm to attack opposing views on global warming. Here's a kicker. UK researchers say taxing food will reduce climate change. Now, what's interesting is yesterday, now this is a big headline, ice age ahead as sun prepares to hibernate. We're going back to the big freeze. That was the headline in 1971 and 1977, if you pull the Time magazines. But yep. Guess what it said in 1997? It had an egg in a frying pan, global yep. warming, be very worried. What did it say again in 2009? Same exact headline. Talk about your propaganda. Weigh in on some of these headlines.
Well, of course, what's happening is that they're realizing that they're losing the debate. And so they're becoming more and more extreme. And that actually backfires on them because people start to say, hey, you know, that sounds crazy. What are you talking about here? And that's what we're seeing happening. As they see their funding disappearing, they keep upping the ante and saying, oh, it's far worse than we thought. You've got to keep funding this. The end of the world is nigh, and so on. But of course, what is not being reported is earliest snows on record. For example, Spain had snow about 3 weeks ago. Japan has had some of the earliest snows on record. But of course, they're not reporting those things because it doesn't fit their agenda. But I can tell you that Trump has been getting the skeptical point of view for some time. He's very well aware of the skeptical side of the issue, which is why he's taking the position that he is. But of course, the other thing for Trump with the climate issue is that they've used it to get rid of CO2, shut down industry, shut down the coal industry in the United States. You know, Obama, that was one of his election promises. He said, yeah, you can open a coal plant, but I'll tax you out of existence. And you saw Hillary Clinton lose so many votes and Trump pick up votes because he said, I'm going to put the coal miners back to work. But the CO2 issue for Trump is very important because it's at the center of his energy policy. It's at the center of his international policy, where he's saying, look, we're not going to keep funding all of these UN agencies and overseas adventures when other people are not putting money in. We're just not going to do it anymore. And of course, it also is at the center of Obama's use of bureaucrats and in order to bypass the legislative process and really control the government. So the CO2 issue and the climate issue is pivotal in so much of what Trump wants to do, and that's why he's focusing on it. But of course, you're going to hear all these extremes, but this is the way they play the game. You know, if you do that, it'll be the end of the world, and you'll be responsible, and how are you going to explain this to your grandchildren, and so on. We'll say, well, if you're right, the grandchildren won't be there. It won't affect them. But this is the fear game.
Yeah.
And of course, people are starting to get tired of it.
Tired indeed. Because I think people are really starting to see the corruption that's involved in all of this. There's big money in the green agenda. And it's not just that, but it's the control issue, as you talked about. Now, of course, there's really frightening legislation to go ahead with geoengineering. We see the chemtrailing. That's been disastrous in the past when you're shooting aluminum and barium and other nefarious, noxious chemicals into the atmosphere. They're doing this in order to combat climate change. And that has had very disastrous consequences in the past. Talk about that a bit.
Well, of course, this is very central to what's behind so much of this. And we have talked about this before, but just a quick overview. All of this goes back to 1859. And it was a pivotal year because that was the year that Darwin's Origin of Species was published. Darwin was immediately accepted by the scientific community. And instead of it being tested by other scientists, it was just accepted without question. But the more significant thing about Darwin, and by the way, Darwin had a cousin by the name of Francis Galton, G-A-L-T-O-N. And Galton is the guy that first created and used the word eugenics. And of course, that fits with Darwin, you know, survival of the fittest, and we've got to get rid of people, and we've got to control who can have children, and so on and so forth. And that is so much behind all of this secularism. But the science used Darwin to defeat religion. They did that very effectively. I mean, the young people today are basically a-religious, and then sadly, because they're looking for a moral code to live by, have made environmentalism a religion. When science defeated religion effectively with Darwin, that then removed God as our reason for being here. And the whole liberal and secular community was left with this problem. Well, if God didn't put us here, well, how did we get here? And then more importantly, why and how are we so different from all the other animals? Now, Darwin was aware of this. Darwin knew that he had a huge gap in his theory. There were all sorts of problems and limitations with his theory. But anyway, one of the things that Darwin did was he published The Origin of Species, and Wallace immediately said, you haven't talked about humans in it. You haven't explained, and your theory must explain, the huge gap between humans and any other animal form on the planet.
Right.
Wallace was the guy that, he didn't create the term, but he implied the term intelligent being, it was an intelligent design, the universe. Darwin then tried to cover himself by writing The Ascent of Man, or The Descent of Man, I should say. And in that book, he tried to claim that there were animals doing all the things that humans could do. Everybody knows that's absolute nonsense. This is where we are now. And the reason what triggered all of this idea for me was when you mentioned geoengineering, that's these arrogant humans who don't believe there's a God. Therefore, they can control the earth, and they can act as God and play God through their geoengineering. It's absolutely the arrogance beyond belief, because if you don't know what you're doing, you're liable to cause far more problems than you're trying to solve. And that's virtually the case in everything that humans have done with trying to control the climate, for example, like cloud seeding and try to increase the rate at which the oceans were absorbing CO2 by spreading iron filings across the North Pacific. No thought given to the damage that did to the water and the plants and animals living in the upper few meters of the water. It didn't work out. It was a complete bust. But this is the problem. As I say, when you get rid of God, you think you can play God, and it's an absolute mess. That's where we're at now.
A few minutes ago, you mentioned eugenics. It's interesting that good old Bill, I call him Bill Eugenics Gates, he's actually hinting again of population control. I don't know if people know this, but Trilateral Commission member Henry Kissinger, let's remember his modern master plan for population control in 1974. People can look up the National Security Study Memorandum 200. This Bill Gates and other moderns, they're actually following lockstep with this very frightening population control document. I mean, it's straight from the eugenics playbook.
Yep. And of course, as I said, Darwin's cousin was part of that. The other thing was that there was an essay published by Thomas Malthus, the son of a wealthy person in England. Of course, what happened was they got great big, what they call manses or rectories to live in. The Victorian rectories of the Church of England are some of the best houses in England. The first son got the estate. The second son went in the army, and it was the third or fourth son went into the church. And Malthus wrote an essay on population and said the population would outgrow the food supply. Well, that was completely wrong. His logic and his argument was wrong. But Darwin took a copy of Malthus with him on the Beagle and said in his notes that this was the greatest influence on his thinking about the theory of evolution. Well, of course, what's Malthus all about? Well, if there's too many people, you've got to reduce the population. And that then becomes something that humans have to do if you're not accepting the natural order of things. So all of these things are all tied together. And one of the things that Malthus argued that the population would outgrow the food supply. Well, then you mentioned Kissinger, and in 1968, the Club of Rome was formed. And its basic arguments were, look, Malthus was right, but he didn't take it far enough, that there are too many people and they're going to use up all the resources, not just the food. We're going to run out of all the resources. And so their theme was, look, the world's overpopulated. That was put together in a book by Paul Ehrlich called The Population Bomb. And boy, when you look at all the things that he said and how wrong he was, of course, he worked with John Holdren, published a book with John Holdren on eco control of populations.
Eco science,
exactly. And of course, Holdren is now sitting as the science czar in Obama's White House.
Well, and let's not forget our good friend Al Gore published Malthusian diatribe. And then you have, as you mentioned, Ehrlich and Holdren, the conjoined Marxist twins. You know, it's more of this Malthusian snake oil, isn't it?
Yeah. Well, and of course, you see that the global warming issue really wasn't about global warming. It was about population control, because you see, the Club of Rome said that not only would we outuse all the resources, but the developed nations were doing it at a faster rate than everybody else. And so, as Maurice Strong, who was the person that took the Club of Rome ideas and put them into practice at the United Nations, What he said was, look, the problem for the planet are the industrialized nations. Isn't it our responsibility to get rid of them? And the question you and I have talked about so often is, how would you do that? Well, if you could show that the byproduct of the industrialized nations, which are running on fossil fuels, if you could show the byproduct CO2 was causing runaway global warming, then you had a scientific and moral argument to shut down those industrialized nations. And that's exactly what they set about doing. But of course, Maurice Strong was very clever.
And he was very good friends with, as you just mentioned, your Kissinger, Rockefeller. He was very good friends with Prince Philip. Prince Bernhard, of course, you've got the World Wildlife Foundation, the 1001 Club. I mean, it just goes on and on, the underbelly of this thing, doesn't it?
Oh, totally. Because, you see, what they're really involved in here is a continuance of a feudal system. There are these very powerful landowners, and then there's the peasants down below. And of course, one of the things that these people see, and this is what people can't get their minds around, is, well, why would Obama want to shut down the United States? Well, of course, the United States is the personification of everything they hate. The whole American Constitution is about the individual and the rights of the individual. And the parallelism, of course, with Christianity is because as a lot of people don't know, Christianity is about free will. God's not telling you how you should behave. He's saying, look, here are your options. It's your choice. And then you will be judged accordingly. Well, of course, giving the people the option and the choice is what the American Constitution is all about. And so America really was the political vehicle that gave the individual freedom around the basic ideas of Christianity, and therefore it had to be shut down. And for people like Obama, who believe that it should be total government control, but you see, they don't really mean that. They say, oh, well, we want government running everything. But no, they don't. What they want is they controlling the government and running everything.
You're right. Yeah. The West is being radically transformed, to me, into this ungodly Marxist society. America's not the last bastion of freedom. It's the first and the only. And for that, it is absolutely under attack, Tim, for it represents everything that the Founding Fathers envisioned, a nation of free people under God. And, you know, I mean, Marxist ideas were diametrically opposed to the Constitutional Republic and the liberties established by the Founding Fathers. And so what's so interesting is, who would have dreamed, even Marx would have salivated, Tim, at using phony junk pseudoscience to convince the world that, hey, you guys are emitting CO2, you plebs. We better get rid of you.
Yeah. Well, of course, you see, what a lot of people don't realize is that the Marx's Manifesto was published about 9 years before Darwin's Origin of Species. And so here you had these basically what appeared to be conflicting ideas, but in fact are blended together into this whole one world government, powerful people telling everybody else how to live. And that's what we're seeing. I'm giving a talk in Phoenix at a conference on freedom before I go to Washington. And even Americans don't understand what America is all about. The first item, it's the only country in the world where the first issue is free speech. Because if you don't have free speech, you don't have any other freedom. And I think I might have told you this joke before that I heard as a teenager, and I kind of laughed at it, but I really didn't realize the significance of it. The only place in England, and even today, where you really have free speech, that is, you can get up and shout and yell at the government, was Hyde Park Corner. You literally got your wooden soapbox and you stood on it, and you could say whatever you wanted without fear of arrest. But it was sort of like a bear baiting circus in a way. Well, you want to shout and yell, well, go over in that corner and we'll let you do it. But nobody's listening to you. But the joke was the fellows up there saying, come the revolution, we're going to do this. And come the revolution, we're going to do that. And he's going through all these things. And finally, getting down the list a bit, and he says, come the revolution, we'll all wear shirts and ties. And a voice at the back shouts out, but I don't want to wear a shirt and tie. The soapbox guy says, come the revolution, you'll do what you're bloody well told.
Yeah.
And of course, that is exactly what's going on. So the free speech thing, and of course, the founding fathers knew that the greatest threat to free speech for the individual American was their own government.
And the Second Amendment protects it. And that's
protects it. Exactly.
And that's the beauty of the First Amendment.
Yep.
Is free.
Yep.
Speech is protected by the Second Amendment, the right to bear arms. And yeah, gun control works, Tim. Just ask the experts.
Yep.
Mao Zedong, Pol Pot, Hitler. Ask the experts. Well, look what happened when they did mass gun confiscation. Americans don't even understand really what is represented. I mean, I recently took a camera crew and I asked questions to a group of high schoolers. And Tim, the dumbing down of the children today is absolutely frightening. I showed him a picture of Ronald Reagan. Not one of these kids between the ages of 17 and 22 on campus could. They're like, yeah, he kind of looks familiar. But Tim, I mean, you were a professor for 20 some years, not just commie core, as I call it, but you've got such incredible doctrination. As Hitler said, you know, give me the youth, I'll give you the child, right?
Yeah, I mean, the Hitler Youth Program had set up and run by Goebbels for Hitler. But that was preceded, of course, by Ignatius Loyola, who was the founder of the Jesuits. And by the way, the current pope is the only Jesuit that ever became a pope, because the Catholics don't trust the Jesuits. They were the thought police of the Catholic Church. And Ignatius Loyola was the first person to say, give me the child and I'll give you the adult. That's what's been happening with the public school system. The parents gave, it was very nice. Oh, yeah, I don't have to worry about the school. My child's going to be educated. But how many parents know what their children are being taught in school? I can tell you that very, very few know. But I can also, as you attest, I've known for a long time that the children aren't learning anything. They're simply not learning anything, or they're learning what the system wants to tell them. And by the way, just to see the extent to which that's occurred, Sheila, is that when I went into university, the old professors had the ideas of the prevailing wisdoms of the time, and the new young people came in and challenged those old ideas and said, hey, we need fresh thinking. How about looking at it this way? That has completely turned upside down. What's happening now is the young people are coming from the high school where they've been totally indoctrinated. They go into university and they are the ones then that are saying, this is the way it is. And it's the old professors, people like me and Fred Singer, who's now 92, you look at the age of the skeptics in the climate field, and they're saying, hang on a minute. No, the science isn't settled. You're being told the science is settled. You're coming in and trying to convince us. And look at the reactions on the campus to Trump. It's really frightening. Yeah, the indoctrination of the children. This is another thing that Trump is going to set free. The right for the parent to choose the school they want, the kind of education that they're going to have. And by the way, we can see the problem developing in Canada. In Newfoundland, when it was a separate country, before it joined Canada, its schooling was done by private citizens, different churches, different religious groups. They had their own schools. They educated their own students. And Newfoundland, they were the top students in Canada. Now, they got rid of all of the private schools and the parochial schools, and they've gone strictly to government running everything. And the level of education is absolute landslide in Newfoundland. So hopefully Trump can do that, give the control back to the parents.
Yeah, well, if he ever gets in, look at Jill Stein and the recounting and Hillary's shenanigans. And my goodness, is the guy going to make it to inauguration? The uproars and the executive orders that Obama is quickly signing in. I mean, this feverish attempt to rig something. I mean, just the absolute chicanery here. Well, and speaking of chicanery, you'll love this story, Tim. This is just fresh off the Associated Press. California sets its sights on cows in effort to combat climate change. So, of course, after tackling emissions from cars and businesses and going eco-friendly, they're going after cows, Tim.
Yeah. And New Zealand did that. They had a tax on your cows for the amount of methane that we're producing. It was something like $200 a year per animal. And Canada had a whole methane reduction program directed at the cattle. It's just absolutely crazy. But I just wanted to, this is one idea that I'm going to present in Phoenix. And I'd like to, you know, the simple things. I mean, that's what the Bible, it's the simple stories, the power of the simplicity of things that we need to get back to. But here's a simple idea for people to understand what's happening with collectivization, because that's the word, as you know, that reeks throughout Marxism. But if two people decide to get together, they know each of them is going to give up something, but they decide that what they're getting is worth what they're going to give up. Okay, so they work together and there are benefits involved. But if you add a third person, you give up more. And the more people you add to the group, the more freedom each individual loses. And that's why the founding fathers in the U.S. set really the state level as the largest size of community that you really wanted. And even then, in the larger states, you're losing a lot of your individualism and individual freedoms. And so, of course, once you get to a world level, you've got nothing left at all. You're not even a number at that level. So that's the way people need to think about it. And it's like in statistics, the more you put data together, the more degrees of freedom that is the each individual statistic can contribute, the more you lose that. Well, it's exactly the same thing with populations. This is, again, Trump, he doesn't express it in this way, and I think he just knows it innately. But when he talks about trade deals, he's saying, no, we're going to stop these trade deals where all these different countries are all being dragged into a trade deal so that each individual country loses control. And he said, we're going to do trade one-on-one. No more of this NAFTA and Trans-Pacific Partnership. Each country is going to create its own deals. And of course, that's what happened in Britain with the Brexit vote. The Britons had lost their control over their immigration, over their laws, over their sovereignty, over their lives. The people outside of London said, we've had enough of this. You know, somebody in Europe dictating and saying what I can do, what I can grow in my garden. So they voted to get out of Europe, to take some control back over to their lives. And that's what's happening around the world. People are fed up with the elitism and the loss of control of their lives. And as I said, that's what Trump is about.
Trump really seems to be very informed that this all is, and we don't call it a hoax. You and I have said that before. You know, this is the biggest fraud of our era, Tim.
Yeah, well, and of course, Trump's been getting advice from different people. Conservatives, for example, Rush Limbaugh has been providing him with advice. And I know that Limbaugh's been getting his climate advice from Roy Spencer, who is one of the leading skeptics.
Yeah.
So there's been input through there. And by the way, it's to Trump's advantage that they the elites underestimate him. I mean, they did it all the way through the election. Some of the things that they missed was and Huckabee, who I love, Mike Huckabee, I mean, a wonderful God-fearing man. Huckabee was asked by Trump to find out amongst the crowds at his rallies information, and he discovered that 30% of them had never voted before. Now, that doesn't mean they were too young. It was across all age groups. They just didn't bother voting because there was no point. They knew that their vote was being wasted. But Trump is a developer, and the developer knows that if you're going to do a big project, you better have everything in place before the project even starts. You better have your building materials, your financing, your tradespeople, everybody ready to go. That's why Myron Ebell, the guy I'm going to see in Washington, was told a month before the election that this is what he was going to be doing. Trump is literally hitting the ground running, and that's important. But the other theme I wanted to develop with you is that through my studies of climate, looking at civilizations, the rise and fall of civilizations, what did climate have to do with that? The main thing was that the climate changed in an area, so increased food production, and surplus food is surplus time, and then you can create any kind of civilization you want. But on a completely different path, I took seniors on tours all over Europe, different events in different regions and different places. A couple of times we went to Pompeii. I was lucky enough to learn Latin when I was a child. And so on one of the trips to Pompeii, we basically only looked at the graffiti. And it's just absolutely revealing about the society, because it's what the ordinary people are thinking. One of the pieces of graffiti says, because there was an election at the time of the eruption, it says, if we get rid of this bunch of scoundrels, we just get another bunch of scoundrels. That's the view of most of the people. You just replace one set of scoundrels with another. So what's the point of even bothering? Let them get on with it. And as long as I can survive and it doesn't affect me too much, it's not going to make the election's not going to make any difference. That's why the fact that 30% of Trump supporters had never voted before was so significant.
Yeah.
They weren't even showing up in the polls because they only polled amongst registered voters. So that graffiti in Pompeii got me thinking, are there times when the people will throw the leaders out, will get rid of the scoundrels? And so I spent a long, many, many years reading, you know, Brodel about civilizations and Arnold Toynbee about civilizations and so on. And I boiled it down to there are two times when the people will rise up and say, no, sorry, you scoundrels have got to go. The one major theme throughout history is a failure of the food supply. It's when you go and read all of the hieroglyphics in the pharaoh's tombs, they are all bragging about how they were able to feed their people through a famine or a drought or whatever. And of course, that was a huge sign of leadership, that you could feed the people. But when you look at the revolutions throughout history, they're virtually all triggered by a failure of the food supply. Because the hostility between, in France, for example, the hostility between the peasants and the aristocrats was always there, still there today. But when you had two consecutive years of harvest failure, and the peasants in the second year of harvest failure were spending 85% of their total income just on bread. And of course, that triggered the revolution. Marie Antoinette, of course, the famous thing, well, told, oh, they're starving, she said, let them eat cake. Well, she didn't say it. It was one of her ladies in waiting. And it was actually a common comment at the time, because as the food supply, you got down to the bottom of the grain barrel, you scraped up all of the husks and all of the grain that you had left, and you put it together with molasses to make a cake. That was the cake that they were talking about. It wasn't the petit fours, the French gâteau.
Right.
It was that basically cow cake. Now, the French Revolution, of course, they go through a hard winter. And then in June of 1789, they storm the Bastille and the French Revolution's on. The aristocrats are still in control in France because the revolution just collapsed in on itself. But in recent times, people say, well, you know, food supply. Obama took the riots in Egypt and said, oh, this is democracy. This is Arab Spring. No, it wasn't. It was food riots because the price of basic foodstuffs around the world went through the roof. Why did it go through the roof? Because Obama started paying farmers to produce ethanol from corn. And the corn production went, most of the crop went into ethanol production. And that, of course, then pushed the price of other basic foodstuffs through the roof. In Egypt, it ended up with the food riots against Hosni Mubarak. Obama seized that opportunity because he wanted to get rid of Hosni Mubarak and he wanted to put in the Muslim Brotherhood into control in Egypt. And by the way, that's what's going on in Venezuela now. A complete failure of socialism, despite all the oil they've got. And the people are rioting because they're starving to death. So that's the one thing that will trigger people getting rid of the scoundrels. The other reason they'll get rid of scoundrels is even more interesting. When the people sense that the elitists, aristocrats, or the scoundrels have forgotten that they're only allowed the power because the people let them have the power, when they start putting out signs that they've forgotten that, then the people will get rid of them. So, for example, James I started with the divine right of kings, and then, of course, Charles I, his son, pushed that, and they chopped his head off. They said, hey, we'll remind you who's put you there. You're not there because God put you there. You're there because we put you there. And don't ever forget it. And the same thing, Louis XVI in France, you know, he said, I am the state. Now they chopped his head off. Well, what was going on in the U.S. was this word coming out from Washington and word coming out from the elitists of the left and the right. We're here by because we're so clever and so much smarter than the rest of you. And so what's happened is this middle class revolution that I talked about at the beginning of the program, the people rose up and said, no, we'll show you who's really in control. We'll show you who's really in charge. And that's what Trump unknowingly tapped into. And as I said, it's happening around the world. It's not just happening in America. It's happening around the world. It's happening in all the countries in Europe as they're collapsing because the people said, look, we don't want migrants. We don't want to surrender our sovereignty. We want control of our own country. It's not because we're racist. It's because you're destroying our lives and you're getting richer at our expense. And we're just not going to allow that anymore.
Exactly. And that is what I've said all these years is, you know, the government doesn't tell us what to do. We tell them. And I've been saying that for a long time. And this is a pivotal turning point where people are going to rise up and say, you know what? We're not going to put up with this anymore. We're not going to put up with you sick pedophiles. We're not going to put up with you criminals. We're not going to put up with these criminal cartels like Hillary Clinton. James Comey, you better investigate. You know, a lot of people are beating up Trump for not being hard on Hillary right now, but good gracious, let the guy get inaugurated and then we'll see what he does. I think he's got a few tricks up his sleeve, Tim. And let's give the guy a little credit instead of jumping on all these bandwagons. Tim, in the waning moments, I want you to just very quickly give out your website for the new listeners and how they can get your brand new book that I love, very easy read and love the pictures. It explains it so simply. How can people find your handiwork?
Well, my handiwork is available on my website at drtimball.com. That's D-R-T-I-M-B-A-L-L timball.com. And I produced one a few years ago, but because I had to combat the academics who'd find fault and pick holes, as one lawyer said to me, he said, I thoroughly enjoyed it, but it was a slog. So what I produce now is about 100 pages of a book that's titled Human Caused Global Warming, The Biggest Deception in History, then subtitled The Why, What, Where, When, and How It Was Achieved. In other words, why are these people altering temperature data? What's their motive? What's going on here? Basically, what I did, Sheila, was I took a PowerPoint presentation and then added my lecture notes into the book so people can follow it through and have a very quick, good idea. Because as you know, whenever a coup occurs, a new power group takeover, the first thing they do is grab the radio and TV stations and they take control of the information stream. Well, the internet provides information for the masses that suddenly every person in the world can access an enormous amount of information. And one of the reasons that Trump was so successful was because he bypassed the media, who have always been the people in power's vehicles for pushing their propaganda and their control. And suddenly social media, which Trump used with such success, bypassed the mainstream media. So despite the fact that the media were almost totally for Hillary Clinton, despite the fact that Clinton spent millions of dollars on advertising and everything else, they still voted her out because the people were getting their information from the internet. So the control of information and access to information is the final stage of the American Revolution. But it's under attack because Obama came in with net neutrality. And this is how they play this game. It sounds such a new innocuous term, net neutrality. And he said, we've got to have net neutrality to prevent these companies gouging you for being getting access to the net as ripoff. And so government's going to run the whole thing.
The government's looking into fake news right now. There's a big attack on, you know, and even Ron Paul said yesterday, fake news comes from our own government. We are at that critical juncture, Tim. It is always such a pleasure to have you on. Of course, you've been away, and we wish you all the best with meeting with Trump's Enviro guy. I'm very excited about that, Tim. Yep. Thank you for coming on, Tim.
Oh, thank you, Sheila. And thank you for allowing me the voice all of these years. I'm so grateful. And if we can just educate people to what's going on and help them understand and make their own decisions. And one of the things somebody said to me the other day, why do you keep going? And I said, I'm bound and determined that no politician will ever be able to say they weren't told.
Yes. And for us truth tellers, I'll tell you what the other piece is. Somebody said to me the other day, why do you do what you do? You put up with all this garbage from people and the criticism. For every fan, I have two critics. They said, why do you do this? And I said, well, it's pretty hard to also walk away from your calling, isn't it, Tim?
Yes, and I really believe if God gives you an ability and you don't use it, that is tantamount to sin.
I agree. Folks, that was Dr. Tim Ball. His information is linked on today's bio, November 30th. Hey, stay tuned tomorrow and Friday. Friday, Dr. Tom Horn and Josh Peck join me on their latest work. And tomorrow, I'm hoping to have Dave Hodges stop by the program. We got a whole other interesting angle on Pizzagate. Dave and I are going to lay out a few bombshells. You're going to want to listen to that. He's got a bunch of stuff going on, so I'm hoping I can get that done. So we will see you tomorrow. Thank you so much for tuning into the broadcast. Good night and God bless.